Good morning. We will start now our continuation of Maseches Yevamos.
Morning.
I don't know, we managed to finish Maseches Shabbos all in one time, but Yevamos is a little different. So we're up to Perek Yud Aleph, and this chapter discusses some Mishnaic and Talmudic commentaries to Parshas Acharemos and Kedoshim, and certain family prohibitions. The Torah gives a list of close relatives we may not marry, and the Maseches Yevamos adds on to those to this list what's called shnios, which means even some additional relatives. We had that already also in the ninth perek, and now this perek discusses so issues of what actually creates a relative. So a relative means, I'm now married to my wife, and her sister is now also a relative of mine. Her aunt is a relative of mine, through marriage. The Gemara discusses whether this is also true of someone that is, where someone has a child with a woman, but they weren't married. Either because he seduced her or even violated her against her will. So does that child that results from that equally prohibited the relatives of that child, equally prohibited to the man as much as a child of someone he's married to? Okay, these are unpleasant realities, and the Mishnah has referred to how the relations are created through such a thing as well. This parak also discusses a whole series of cases where children get mixed up, where two different children are born and they got mixed up at birth. We don't know which one is my child, we don't know which one is my neighbor's child. There's no adultery or anything, just that the two children were in the same baby ward and they got mixed up. So I believe there have been some cases made the news with these kind of things. And let's say a Kohen and his Eved got mixed up. We don't know which one is the Kohen, which one is the Eved. What do you do, right? So this comes in with a lot of issues, especially if a woman was married to two different men within 3 months. We don't know if the child is a 9-month baby of the first husband or a 7-month baby of the second husband. A lot of these things are obviated today because of paternity tests. So we can determine whether she's the DNA of the first man or the second man. But what if the first man isn't alive anymore? We can determine whether he's certainly not the child of the second one. And the halacha does allow for these things to determine this parenthood. Okay, finally, in chapter 12, we get up to what's called mitzvahs chalitza, which describes the actual chalitza itself. Like, you have to wait till the very end of Maseches Gittin to know how the Mishnah is to describe how a get is done. So now it takes till chapter 12 to describe what's done for a chalitza. You need three judges for it, and it's actually a Maisa Beis Din. And of course, you need certain things to be done. She has to say something. The people around have to say something. He has to say something. She has to take off a shoe. She has to spit before him. These are all kinds of things that need to be done. The Gemara and Mishnayos talk about the order in which they are done and what is indispensable. What happens if she spits but he doesn't see it? What happens if she spits and it gets blown away in the wind? And then Mishnayos cover everything in this Masechta. Okay, the 13th chapter is called Beis Shammai Omrim, and it talks about a concept called mi'un. Mi'un means refusal. A woman has the right to refuse her husband if she was married before she was 12 years old, not by her father. Okay, the only way a marriage of a girl before she's 12 can be considered a halachically binding marriage is if her father made the match. Her father made the shidduch. Her father died and she's 11 and she had a chance for a shidduch. So if her brother or mother arranges it, so the day she turns 12, in one day, she has the right of miun. Okay, Beis Shammai says that's only if if she was an arusa, if she was engaged. Beis Hillel says no, even if she was married. She was married at 10, married at 9, or whatever it is. Now, Tosfos in Saches Kedushin in the second parak discusses where the Gemara there says that a girl should never be married before 12, even by her father. At that time, you know, people didn't live as long and they got married very young, right? Most men were married by 18. Most women were married by 12, 13, 14 was already old to get married at the time. So if she was in the Mishnah in Maseches Kiddushin, we'll learn in a few weeks, says that no one before 12 should ever get married. And Tosfos writes down, this is very sad, he says that today we try, if we can get a shidduch for our daughters at 11, we try to do it, because with all the persecution and all the crusades and everything, we never know if we're going to be out, live past the time of our daughters being 12. And if we can get a shidduch, it's better to do so before she's an orphan. Wow. Okay, so that's chapter 13. Chapter 14 has a series of cases, about 40 cases that are most amazing cases. The Friedricher Rebbe, the next to last Lubavitcher Rebbe, says that it's inconceivable that any of these 40 cases have ever happened in the history of mankind. But the Mishnah is just ready with the answer in case it happens. It's talking about a case where there were, say, two deaf men who are married to two deaf women, their brothers and their sisters. And then one dies, and then the other. It all has to do with certain takanos to make marriages available for people who do not really have the true agency on their own to affect a marriage, either because he's a shota, he doesn't have the mental capacity to be considered marriage. What happens if a man wants to marry a woman who's a shota, right? For whatever reason, right? Man who's a pikeach, man who's of his mind, or two shotas that want to marry each other. We have it in Yachad. They have two people who are maybe qualified, maybe not, but two deaf people who are born deaf and dumb and never spoke a word, but they want to marry. They know they have feelings and they want to marry. So the Mishnayos talks about a whole series of possibilities and different cases, and how to do the chalitza, how to do the yibum in such cases. Right? Okay, so that's the 14th parak, and it's all one Mishnah. And the whole Gemara just talks about every hechatimtza that can exist. The next talks about a woman who goes with her husband traveling, and then she comes back and says, "My husband died." Right, so that is, is she believed to remarry? Can she do a yibum on the brother? Right, so this chapter talks about how to make sure a woman doesn't become an aguna, which is a woman tied to a husband who's maybe alive, but he's not around. He's disappeared someplace. What do we do? Right, can we call her a widow if we don't know that the husband is dead? So the testimony necessary to make a woman a widow is very, very, very light. It's very easy. Someone says, "I saw him dead from afar." He goes, no one's going to give testimony unless he's sure about it. No one would want to give testimony about something where the only way for him to be proven to be a liar is for someone to just show up alive against his control, right? So this chapter talks about what's called takonas igun, to assure that a woman doesn't become an aguna. We allow less than necessary testimony for, let's say, court cases of monetary issues, even, or certainly in the nefeshos. All right, so and here if let's say she had children, we don't let them inherit their father, because it's kind of seigun to make sure she doesn't remain in laguna. But in order for them to inherit, we have to be sure that the man is dead. So it's like palgina dibur, it's like half and half. We consider him dead for the woman to be married, but we don't consider him dead for the children to be considered orphans. All right? Until we have better testimony. All right? So, and if it is also, this parak talks about cases where a man travels with his son, his only son, and they both died, but we don't know which one died first. If the son died first, the man died childless. Right? The man died first, he did not die childless. Even if he died a minute before the son, the woman is not given to Yibum, if that was his only child. the woman is not given to Yibam, and she doesn't need a chalitza. She's not allowed to do Yibam because the man didn't die childless. This parak talks about cases where we're not sure which one died first. So we don't do the Yibam in case the man died first, right? We don't do the Yibam because then we're not allowed to do the Yibam, but we do a chalitza in case the child died first. Right, in which case you would need a chalitza to move on. Right. Finally, the last chapter talks about additional ways that we know a man is dead, either through signs, or, you know, we found his arm, and he had a birthmark on the arm. So we know it's his arm, but a man can live without an arm. How do you know they just found the arm, that it's his, and then even if you're sure of that, maybe he's still alive someplace. Right, so this, the last chapter talks about all these things about a man who fell off a ship, and we don't know what happened to him. Right? Did he drown? Did he find a plank and he's floating someplace on an island? We don't want to make sure that a woman doesn't become an aguna, but we also don't want to make sure, we don't want to be sure that a man doesn't come home to his wife who's remarried to someone else. Right? Okay, that is the end of Maseches Yevamos. The largest Masechta in Sefer Nashim, and therefore it's first. And Mirtz Hashem, on Tuesday, we'll start Maseches Ksuvos, that will continue, please God, Hakol B'Seder, in our learning of Mishnayos. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
All the very best. Kol Tuv. Be well.